Yes, for the second day in a row, the show will not be started with a hello there. It'll just be started with a welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
That's right.
Dave DiNatale, in for Nathan Zagura and
it's like
Jason
a breath
Gibbs.
Of fresh air without that long hello there.
Hello there. No, I'm going to do it. I told you I won't do it. DiNatale and Wilhelm with you for the next 2 hours here on Cleveland Browns Daily as we get you ready now. I mean, obviously, the Browns starting now this little layoff, as we talked about yesterday, but also certainly we will not ignore the implications of tonight, game four of the NBA Finals at the Q as the Cavaliers play host to the Golden State
Warriors.
That's
so true, so true. And I'm excited for tonight, just, you know, not being in Berea, making my way into downtown and seeing the signs and the buzz and the T-shirts and the hats is very, very cool. And even furthermore, for me, the, you know, critical thinker, but yet the optimist when it comes to Cleveland sports, now that I'm, you know, residing back here in Northeast Ohio.
Yes.
I just thought how cool it would be to win this one, go back to Golden State, get the next one, and you have the opportunity to clinch it here in Cleveland.
I said before the series started, I thought that the Cavs could win this thing in six games. And maybe it's because it's the dreamer in me. I don't care. The Cavs could win a championship in Timbuktu. I don't care. But how special it would be to actually do it on your home floor would be, you know, something really special. And of course, it's a part. You got to win tonight before you can think about Monday. But Matt, you know, this series has already there's been a shift a little bit, certainly in the momentum. Now Golden State's got a lot of pressure on them because people are questioning, boy, is this really, you know, what happened to this team that, you know, blew the Cavaliers out in game two? Because everything gets, you know, the momentum and all the narratives switch.
It did.
But now all of a sudden, if the Cavaliers can hold serve tonight at home, it makes it a three-game series.
It definitely does. Yeah. And I know that everyone will forget so quickly how bad the Cavaliers played in games one and two, but predominantly game two where it felt like a give up.
Yeah.
And just staying abreast to everything Cavs, because we're in the midst of this finals run. You know, I every opportunity I have to hear from both the Cavs and, you know, from the court or from their press conferences, and then even watching some of the videos on ESPN.com of Draymond Green talking about how we got punked.
Yes.
He said punked 7, 8, 9, 10 times. And he even goes further more into the fact that you want to talk about shooting percentages, you want to talk about lineup changes or strategies or game plan, throw that out the window. They flat out came with a better effort. They were more physical, and they won the 50-50 ball. It became a 90-10 ball.
Yeah.
And I think that is what allows the Cavs to play into the type of game that they want, because when Nathan and I have discussed, you know, the finals, you know, after both game one and game two losses, it was, we are a team that when firing on offense and hitting our shots, that's Kyrie, that's JR, yeah, not so much LeBron. He gives, you know, pretty consistent effort. Tristan,
yes,
when he's able to dominate those boards and get those scrappy 50-50 balls, we defend better than anybody in the NBA because
when
of who we are.
When the offense,
but we
clicks,
gotta be hitting,
yep,
because I don't feel like Kyrie gives that extra effort to fight through the screen the way he does when he's hitting it on the offensive end as he is when he's struggling on the offensive end. He's fighting through because they're in the zone both offensively and defensively. So I think just like Game Three, our ability to come out, and believe me, I know listening to a few other shows that there was a restless nervousness in that arena.
Yes.
Like leading into the tip-off. It took the 9-0 start to really get the fans into it, and then it never stopped. We now are in it, and we now have to be the sixth man, the 14th man, whatever you want to call us, because make it as difficult as we can on the Golden State Warriors to get this game and be affected by not only the effort of the players, but the effort of the fans, and truly make this our home court advantage.
Steve Kerr said something before, I think it was before game two, after Golden State's subs and reserve players played so well in game one, Livingston, Barbosa, Iguodala, et cetera, Bogut,
sure,
et cetera, that those types of players tend to play better at home. I can't, and again, it goes back to this home road thing, but, and obviously we saw that with the Cavs. I mean, J.R. Smith was terrific in game three. Tristan was terrific in game three. Jefferson, terrific in game three. Do you sense that too? That for some reason, guys who maybe are who have limited roles, but important roles, tend to do it better at home?
I do agree. And I think part of the reason is because, and it's a lot of the deliberation that I'm sure Tyronn Lue is having, maybe even as we speak about starting Kevin Love or not starting Kevin Love, because the energy that you get from a fan base when you're out on the floor, you get into the flow, the emotions start flowing. When you start on the bench, you're kind of, especially, and so for the Cavs and Golden State, it's the world against us, yes, and I'm sitting here cold. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're at home and it's the world is with us, I can't wait to get my minutes. You know, no matter what it is, Mozgov for 6 or, Delly for his 15, 20, or 21 minutes, whatever it is, you're chomping at the bit to get out and play in front of your fans because and really take in the environment that is a home finals game. So you want to be out there. So, and I just feel like it's, you're kind of like biding time until you get in on the road. And it's like, you are like inching, like clawing to get on the court when Tyronn calls your name to sub in when you're at home, because you want to take part in front of where you feel most comfortable in front of your fans.
216-578-0850 is our number. Tweet the show at Browns_daily. Our producer today, Eric Williams, EZE, will be monitoring the Twitter box. Use the hashtag AskCBD. If you've got Browns, certainly we'll not ignore the Cavs. If you want to tweet us about the Cavs, we'll certainly talk about that. But if you've got Browns-related questions,
we'll interject Cavs with a little bit of Browns.
Absolutely.
At least for today.
Exactly.
We're playing for a championship, folks.
Yes.
Sorry. And it's a Friday.
Be all in.
That's right.
So we'll certainly talk about that. But we will, at 1:30, we'll hear, as promised, Browns head coach Hugh Jackson as he kind of closed up minicamp yesterday. We'll hear what the coach had to say. At 2:30, we'll hear from Al Saunders. A lot of the assistant coaches talked yesterday. Al's one of them. I'm always interested in hearing they are pearls of wisdom. The Browns wide receivers coach, the senior offensive assistant, he talked to the media yesterday, so we'll hear a little bit from Al Saunders as well.
What's funny is, Nathan and I have the luxury to be in the building every day to essentially feel and see the pulse of energy throughout Berea, as well as the visual activity. And what's funny is Hugh Jackson was named the head coach. He did his press conference, and the very next, probably I'd say 12 to 16 hours after Hugh Jackson was hired as the Cleveland Browns head coach, there was a 70-year-old, man walking around the building aimlessly without a title. Me really not knowing who he is, but kind of knowing who he is, simply because he was with the Kansas City Chiefs when I was with the San Diego Chargers. So he was the coordinator there. So, and I just, is that Al Saunders? Because of his 40 plus years in the National Football League. So, I think it's so great that we get an opportunity to hear from him, and for the fan base and the dog pound out there to know that, and Hugh Jackson will admit this, that Al Saunders was in the building 8 to 12 hours after Hugh Jackson hit the building here in Berea. But he was their first hire. He was the priority. And you'll hear Hugh Jackson reference him as one of the best coaches in NFL history. And then, as Nathan and I always talk about, if you have the opportunity to come to training camp and get close to those ropes, please take an opportunity to go over and watch the wide receivers in individual, or stand on the sideline behind the wide receivers and just watch what a 70-plus-year-old man and the effort that he puts into every single rep and every single practice for our Cleveland Browns, and you'll want to jump on his bandwagon as well as Hugh Jackson's.
There's been a lot of conversation, and I brought this up with Tony Grossi recently in our conversations on the Hey Tony Show. There's a lot of pressure on Hugh Jackson. He's coming in here trying to rebuild this organization, be the head coach, call the plays on offense, try to resurrect Robert Griffin III, help develop Cody Kessler. All these things he's got to work on and figure out. It's a tall task. It's one of the reasons why I think the pedigree of these assistants, and most notably a guy like Al Saunders,
yes,
I think makes you feel a lot better about what Hugh has to do here, because he's surrounded himself with the right kind of people.
You're absolutely right. And I think I'll throw it out there again. And I did this one day on a whim, just simply knowing that, you know, the last regime with Mike Pettine and his assistant coaches, you know, with their backgrounds in the National Football League, it was a few years. Some guys know years. I did the math, and it was, I think this staff has 197 years of NFL coaching experience, and the last staff had 77 years. And then what I did even furthermore was I took away the two highest tenured coaches off of each staff. I think Mike Pettine was one and Wilbert Montgomery was the other on the old staff. So that's like maybe minus 30 years. And then you take Al Saunders 40, and I think Ray Horton's maybe 20 plus. Okay, yes. So 60. And then you get down to like 130 years of NFL experience still left on this staff, and like 40 years left on last year's staff. The last staff. So it's what I talk about is my experience in the National Football League, and that comes from 8 years. These guys, you're talking about 200 years of experience of handling players, handling personalities, grooming talent, cutting players. They know what's good enough or what it takes, and they know what's not. So I think that's very clear. And I think as I look at, and you talked about Hugh Jackson, you look at Al Saunders, take over those young wide receivers. Yes. That way, Hugh Jackson doesn't have to be spread too thin because he trusts Al. He was the first guy he hired. You look at what Pep Hamilton and working with Andrew Luck as an offensive strategy quarterback/quarterback coach, you can kind of say, yes, I'm going to work with my quarterbacks every day, but when I need to step away, I've got a guy I can trust in Pep. And you talk about the defensive side of the ball. Ray Horton, what he's done both here in Cleveland, in right. Arizona, his Pittsburgh pedigree. And then lastly, what I thought was the coolest is soon after Al Saunders, the other retention was Chris Tabor. You know, he lays out the expectation of what he want, how he wants our special teams unit to play and set the field for our offense and get the ball back in good field position and so on and so forth. But everything was done for a reason. And I think what it allows Hugh Jackson to do is, as we've heard from these players, be the motivator.
Yes.
You know, push these guys so we can step away from the X's and O's, even though he'll be our play caller and he'll work hand in hand with our quarterback and the development of Cody Kessler. When he steps away, there are individuals that he trusts, you know, grooming and that are on the same length, on the same wavelength with in regards to what his expectation is in all three facets of the game.
All right. So that gets us kind of rolling here on Cleveland Browns Daily on this Big Friday show here again. Friday forecast today. Hugh Jackson today, Al Saunders today. We'll open up the Twitter mailbag today. Plus time for your calls, 216-578-0850. And game four, NBA Finals tonight at the Q. Cavaliers trying to even up the best of seven series at two games apiece against the Golden State Warriors. That is all straight ahead. It's Cleveland Browns Daily. Dino and Wilhelm here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dino and Wilhelm here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Jason Gibbs both on vacation. Gibbs getting married tomorrow. Big day tomorrow. Big day.
I'm excited about tomorrow night.
I know.
I'm not going to lie.
Producer Eric Williams, you got a glimpse as to...
Will you be there?
I'll be there. Nice. Yes.
Who now else you, from the... What other teammates will be there that you know of?
Hooley.
Okay.
Reggae.
Sweet.
Casey Kulis.
Awesome.
Fontana will be there.
Nice. I feel like there's a lot of beer drinking going to be going on.
Yes.
It is a Gibbs inspired wedding.
You saw the alcohol.
Yeah,
supply?
I helped get all the alcohol to the location, and there was, I believe, 6 to 8 kegs.
Woo!
And there was
God, I feel like back in college.
There Seriously. Was probably about like 10 full boxes full of liquor, probably more than that, and
Jeez.
Then a big
oh
amount
goodness.
Of wine as well. So. It's going to be a good
strength
time.
In numbers.
Strength in
not
numbers.
Only in who's coming, but also to provide for them.
So that is why the golden tones of Jason Gibbs are not on the show today. Was looking as we continue here, just off the football again for a second here, and we'll also be talking Cavs. But Jim Brown amongst those in Louisville today for the
honoring
funeral
Muhammad
and
Ali.
Celebration. It really is, as much as it's a funeral, it is a celebration of the life of Muhammad Ali. Jim Brown is on SportsCenter right now with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Dr. Harry Edwards. And, of course, with Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali will always be linked because of the activism they had for civil rights
sure.
in the late 60s. And, you know, they always talk about the black athletes meetings that they had here in Cleveland. And I was looking, our general manager, Keith Williams, showed me there was a picture that said WGAR on one of the microphones at a press conference there.
That's cool.
And that was our frequency at that point, 850. So
you know what's really cool?
Pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome. And to just kind of like take a step back and even, you know, the passing of Will Smith, you know, a former teammate of mine, murdered in New Orleans after that, you know, the hit and run accident down there in the French Quarter. It basically brought all of us former Buckeyes, you know, that played on that 2002 team kind of together and to really understand, like, we don't talk enough. We don't text enough. We don't see each other enough because we're all over. We're spread all over. Some of us are here in Ohio, but some of us are spread all over the USA. But in the passing of Muhammad Ali, you know, there's, you know, via Twitter, via Facebook, or all over ESPN and ESPN.com, there's, you know, videos of his speeches. His quotes are coming, you know, through, you know, the NFLPA, you know, links and so on and so forth that I get in my email and text message. And the one thing that I enjoy, and I kind of say it, I hate that it takes someone passing for you to go back and understand how great they are. And seeing all this Muhammad Ali footage has really, you know, opened my eyes to who he was. As I was a boxing fan, but not an overly, you know, like have to, you know, get every pay-per-view boxing fan. But what it's really allowed me to do is to go back because I'm a Tiger Woods guy, you know, early Tiger Woods guy. I was a Michael Jordan fan. I was a little front runner when I was a kid. I was a Dan Marino guy. I was a, you know, Walter Payton, you know, Jim McMahon, Bears guy in different little windows. And what I've done over the last couple of days since his passing is allowed me to go back and just watch how great these guys really are. And then what makes it really relevant is when you do hear the comparisons of Magic saying that, you know, my Lakers teams could beat the Warriors and so on and so forth, or is Jordan better than LeBron, who's the best ever? When you go back and watch what these guys were doing in an entirely different era, 20, 25, 30 years ago in the NBA, on the football field, in the boxing ring, I have to go with the old. The new, saying that those Bulls teams, those Lakers teams would mop up some of the teams that we have playing for championships in this era.
I always, you know, I'm a big advocate, and you can find it on YouTube. Go back and watch Ali's fights with Joe Frazier.
Yep.
You know, even the one he lost, March 8 of 71, the first super fight. You know, the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman. You will see his greatness. But you also, you see why Ali was such a complex figure, because I mean, there were, you know, like nobody's perfect. You know, there are people, and I heard Vietnam veterans calling in our shows and talk shows, you know, criticizing Ali still after all these years.
Sure.
You know, it's such complex, but it makes interesting. And then you add that, and just to kind of put a bow on this, you know, we found out this morning Gordie Howe passed away. Arguably the greatest hockey player of all time, at least that's what
Wayne
Gretzky says.
Correct.
You know, you can certainly have the argument, but 88 years old, Gordie Howe really was the first truly great hockey player, helping to bring that sport into the mainstream.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I thought he revolutionized the game of hockey and probably set the table for a guy like Wayne Gretzky, for guys like Mario Lemieux, for guys like Jaromir Jagr, who are still playing hockey. It put a spotlight on hockey. I think it put a spotlight on the Detroit Red Wings, you know, to become a, you know, a legacy type of franchise that other franchises want to emulate because of they had their centerpiece and they won a lot of championships because of their centerpiece.
Absolutely. Now, on Twitter, you can tweet us, besides at Browns_daily. I'm checking my Twitter handle, at Dino Cleveland. Matt Wilhelm, if he feels like checking his Twitter, is at MattWilhelm35, only if he feels like it. Scott and Shelby, my man Scott and Shelby says, you guys need to stop with the Cavs winning game 6. Stop now. One game at a time. Granted, I get Scott. I understand.
I didn't say they were going to win game 6. I said how cool it would be to have the opportunity
to win the NBA Finals here on this floor.
Correct.
But everybody understands you got to win tonight. You got to even the series.
Yes.
Then
you even the series at 0-0.
Yeah.
I mean, it's as cliche as that sounds. You win the series tonight, it's 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
It's then who can win 2 out of the next 3.
That's it.
And I really feel in my heart of hearts, whoever can win on the other team's floor will win the series.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they always say. You have to go back. I was trying to find it last week with Hooley. I can't remember an NBA Finals where a team won in seven games, all home games, you know, just one, you know, without winning a road right. game. It's been a long time. It's very, but, you know, in this series, it feels like, you know, it's going to be very tough for a team to win on the road.
Sure.
It's just the way this, you know, these blowouts have been taking place.
Absolutely. And I think even furthermore, if the comments made by Steph Curry about his regular season visit back to Cleveland, about the locker room still, you know, smelling like champagne, by taking care of your business and winning tonight, whether it's here or whether it's there, winning a championship is winning a championship. Mm-hmm. It's you can eradicate the fact that they're going to celebrate in our locker room on our floor by winning tonight.
You think Steph Curry's hurt?
Because
you always hear, if he plays well, then he's great. But, you know, if he doesn't play well, he's got to be hurt.
I think he's, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday, I think that they were pedal to the metal for 82 games, winning 73 to break that record. And there's pressure and there's minutes that you put on your body that to break that record, and you push yourself to the limit to make history, and then you walk into the playoffs, and as we said yesterday, they've played three or four more games than the Cavaliers.
He tweaked his knee, tweaked his ankle.
And I think the pressure of being down 3-1 and having to go win, or you're going home, there's pressure probably even larger than the 73 because, okay, we've done the 73 and we were a great regular season team, but for the opportunity to go back-to-back and be, you know, a legacy type of franchise and be on the radar, and you have the unanimous MVP and all these, there's pressure associated with that. So you push yourself for those minutes, you know. And what I see in Steph Curry is he may or may not have something nagging, but at this point, and we talk about in football, when you're getting in the week 14 and teams are playing their best football in December, they're missing at least one piece of the puzzle and everybody's banged up. It's, you know, pop a Tylenol, rub some dirt on it, and get out there and go play.
Right.
And I think that's what he's doing. And what's great and why I think a fast start and a physical hustle by the Cleveland Cavaliers top to bottom will a victory here in Cleveland is because I think at signs of adversity, if Steph Curry's not hitting or at signs of adversity, Steph Curry's seems to me like his mind has wandered. Mm-hmm. Like just, okay, we've got home court advantage. Get me back to Oracle. Get me back to the West Coast.
I mean, because Steve Curry even asked him on the bench, you know, kind of mouthed over to him the other night, are you okay? And it's just, you're just wondering if, like you said.
And if your head coach knows and sees it.
Right.
And has that little conversation with you, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Something's wrong. And I don't think, and again, player's just going to go, I'm all right. But then it's going to be the sub-conversations of teammate to teammate, trainer to player, assistant coach to player, or Steve Kerr at halftime walking back out into the court or after that loss, that the real answer is going to come out.
Yeah, I mean, having said all that, I mean, I would expect that Curry will have his best game of the finals to this point tonight. You would think, because so much pressure is on the line. They don't want to go back tied. They want to go back and have a chance to win it Monday.
Can you – but to that point, I think – have we seen the big three all fire at the same time in the finals yet?
No.
No, we have not.
No.
So if we're really piggybacking what we did in game three and we're going to carry that over, kind of forcing the Warriors' hand now to play us instead of us play them with that small ball, let them come play us.
Right.
And I think if we get the big three firing – and in some cases, you can even call it, I'll say the big with a sub four in JR.
Yes.
You know, if Love doesn't hit, JR's got to hit. If Kyrie's not on, JR's got to, you know, we need three of our four starters to be, you know, 15 to 25 points.
And that's whether Love starts or comes off the
correct.
Bench. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter to
the
me.
The more I thought, Hooley kind of talked me off the ledge a little bit yesterday, although I still, if I had a vote, if Ty Lue asked me, I'd probably say go with what, you know, you had success with in game three. Keep Jefferson in your starting five. Bring Love off the bench. It doesn't matter. I mean, as far as minutes, Kevin's still going to get minutes, and he's still going to get chances.
Absolutely.
Place.
And I think if the city is quote unquote all in, I would imagine that the 12 or 13 members that make up the Cavaliers are all in as well, with our air quotes in unison, that whatever it takes. That if you were so upset last year by not being to help this team in the playoffs because of your injury in the Boston series, that you would do anything to participate
and
give whatever you have to win a championship. And if what Tyronn Lue is asking of you is to get 25 to 30 minutes, but have them come off the bench.
Right.
I don't put that ego aside. Right. That $112 million is guaranteed.
Right. And do we think his psyche is that fragile?
I think at times people question it.
Yeah.
Because of the type of player he is, you know, being as big as he is and yeah, being a good rebounder, but you know, predominantly being a jump shooter.
Yeah.
So people might think that, but for me personally, and I don't have any problem with Richard Jefferson starting the game, playing the first 4 minutes to right. see how the Warriors are going to have to right. come back against the same right. lineup we just had success with.
Right.
And then you swap out and get right. Love. And it's like, okay, so it's one less NBA final start on your resume. But if we win the game and go win a championship, right. does it really matter?
No.
No one's going to look back and go, Tyronn Lue might go be called a genius for doing it. But ultimately, everyone gets a ring.
People want to make this into a referendum on Kevin Love's career. You know, whether he starts, you know, if the Cavs don't start him, that must mean he stinks.
Right.
And that's got nothing to do with it.
Has nothing to do with it. So I wouldn't be surprised if I have a hunch that Tyronn Lue is going to start Kevin Love.
Really?
I don't know. I don't have yeah. it. Again, it's basketball. I yeah. don't have any insiders.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
but
just
I have a hunch that Kevin Love's going to start because he's passed all the protocol and the table is set for him to start. But, and I think many could say the same way that I said Jefferson might have, you know, and it's not a quick hook for anything he did, but I think to go back, it's a chess match.
Yeah.
And I think if you start the same lineup that you just had success with, you want to see how the Warriors are going to stop that lineup.
Absolutely.
And then you immediately, you know, you come out and go, oh, they're doing this. Maybe they go big with Bogut. Okay. Well, we're going to take Jefferson out and put Love back in and
right.
stretch
right.
that team. Okay. Then you're into the, you know, the cat and mouse game that is, you know, football X's and O's and basketball X's yeah. and O's. And I love that about these NBA finals.
Yeah, it is. And it's people say, well, coaches, do coaches really matter? Yeah. Figuring out the right five to have on the floor at the right time. Yeah, it matters.
It does. And
yeah.
I think that, you know, hearing the, you know, the assistant coach ripped the, you know, what's of the Cavs.
Yes.
While professional athletes to get to the level of success that they have to be self-motivated. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while you have a chink in that armor and you need to get, you know, the same way that, oh, my son, you know, he's a good kid.
Right.
But every once in a while, he'll act up, and when he acts up or acts out, he needs to get his you-know-what ripped.
That's it.
To fall back in line. And I think that's kind of what happened. So I love the fact that, you know, a coach has to be, you know, Tyronn Lue has to be very savvy with the X's and O's, but you got to have the right people in line that have a voice strong enough to be heard by your team.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up next on Cleveland Browns Daily, we will get back to the football side of things as the team finished up minicamp yesterday. Mandatory minicamp is over, and really now for the next 7 weeks, the Browns are on hiatus as they get ready for training camp in late July. What are Hugh Jackson's thoughts about where his team stands at this point here in the offseason? He'll be asked about the quarterback, as we told you yesterday. It's still don't have an answer for you, but we'll let Hugh talk about that and a lot more. Hugh Jackson comes up next here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Back here on Browns Daily, Dave DiNatale for Nathan Zagura and Jason Gibbs. Matt Wilhelm joins me now. Browns are done with mandatory minicamp. They wrapped things up yesterday. Head coach Hugh Jackson on the way out. Spent some time with reporters. Let's hear from the Browns head coach.
Sometimes you hate to see the offseason come to an end. But I can't be happier with a group, more happier with a group than these men. You know, I be remiss. I have so many people to thank just to get to this point. Obviously, we got a long way to go. But, you know, again, I go back to my my hiring from D and Jimmy and Sashi and Paul, you know, just the environment that we've been trying to create. And then obviously the coaching staff, the staff that I was able to hire to come here and to assist me in helping our organization become better. And then Adam Beard and his staff, well, they've done a tremendous job of preparing our players and getting them out here in shape and able to go as hard as we asked our players to go. So, I mean, Adam is, he's a great find. And then I think to everybody else within our organization, just the support they've given me just up to this point has been outstanding. Now, like I said, we haven't played a football game or anything like that, but you have to lay the right foundation, and I think it's been laid. And then when I talk about our players, obviously I'm really excited about so many of our players and just the potential that's there. And I say potential because you don't know yet until, you know, you really play football. You know, what they can be and what they will be as a football team.
But I know our guys are working hard to become the best team that we can. And I couldn't have asked for a better group, for a better opportunity for myself. And guys have done extremely well.
Will your training camp depth chart look a lot different than the one you might have had going through this process?
The one I might have had going through this process?
Well, I don't know what exactly drew up. But, yeah. Will you spend part of the offseason drawing up a fairly specific training camp depth chart?
Probably not, you know, because, again, it's still everything's got to kind of play itself out. You know, again, I don't, you know, I think you guys kind of know I am. We just kind of go out there and put our head down as a group and work. And I don't think, you know, again, we don't play until a couple weeks prior to getting back here to go to camp. So that won't be my first concern. It'd be, you know, getting all these men back here safe and happy and healthy and excited about what we got to do ahead of us. So I kind of worry about that when we get back here, you know. But if you're asking if some of the pieces in my mind are coming into focus, yes, somewhat. But still, you know, until you put on pads and grind it out every day and work like I anticipate in this team working, well, I really know about these men in tough, tough conditions. And so that's something I'm still left to find out.
You, RG3, finished strong there with a nice pass on the fly.
Only one? You guys only seen one?
And then, and a hockey after that. But, I mean, he really kind of wrapped up camp in a strong fashion today, do you think?
Yeah, I think he's gotten better. I said it yesterday. I've been saying it for a while. I mean, I think every day. I mean, I know he gets highly scrutinized for a lot of different things, but he has gotten better in a lot of areas. And, again, I, you know, it goes back to the same thing. I think these men are allowing this coaching staff to coach him, and we're trying to do the best job we can of putting them in the right environment so they can get better. And there's a lot of guys that have improved, you know, from, you know, step A to where we are today. But we also understand we still got a big hill to climb, and we're just going to keep climbing until we can get there.
You mentioned a little bit last week with the long weekend, but now the guys get, 6 weeks off. Right. What's your message to them?
Well, I told them very clearly that I expect them to come back ready. You know, we don't want to go backwards. I'm not going to let them go backwards. And it's really important that the men in the locker room don't let this team go backwards, because they've established a really good foundation and a really good work ethic. So I think what's really important is that they come back here ready to hit the ground running and understand that we're here to get some business done, you know, each and every day. And I think they will. I really do. To a man, I would be very surprised if we don't come back here in tip-top shape, ready to practice, ready and eager to get going.
Is this a nervous time for you at all? I mean, guys get in trouble when they're away for 6 weeks. Is that a nervous time for you?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's like you have a bunch of kids, you know, away from you. And I told them, you know, and I do. I love each and every one of them. And I know sometimes things happen, but my phone is always available. You know, they can call me. I don't care what time, day, whatever it is. And they got to understand the routine is now different. You know, it's a different routine, so they have to handle that right. And I expect them to handle that as pros so they can get back here. And that's part of being a professional is handling that downtime or whatever you want to call it the right way so that you can be a part of this football team.
Just to get it on the record, you haven't changed your mind about naming a starting quarterback?
Absolutely not. No, sir.
Does that mean when you start training camp it's an open competition, that it's a quarterback competition?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to see it that way, yes, it is. I mean, I'm being very honest with you guys. As I told you, I haven't come close to really letting my mind go there. I mean, I'm just trying to help our football team improve and that position improve and as much as I can, you know. And I think that's what's really important, you know, as we start getting closer in training camp to getting ready to play and as I've seen more things. And I'll go back and evaluate all of this, but I can assure you guys, I mean, there will be no, you know, earth-shattering announcement between now and training camp or anything like that. So you guys go on your vacations, have a good time. Don't worry about it. Nothing's going to come that you guys go, wow, he didn't tell us this. No, it's still a ways away in my mind, but I feel good about where we are, and I feel good about, you know, the process that we've been in for those guys. I'm sorry? Corey? Oh, my gosh. He's a tremendous player. He's going to be really good. I mean, I ride him pretty hard, because he has so much ability, and I want to get it out of him. And he's really shown why we drafted him in the first round. I mean, he is a tremendous talent, and if he keeps working like he is and stays as humble and he has great desire to be a great football player, I think that's going to happen for him. But He's still got to earn it. He's got to work for it. Got to go fight for it to go get it, and I think he will.
Dude, we spend about a lot of time. More? We spend a lot of time asking about the skill guys, quarterbacks, running backs this year. But you got two spots on the offensive line that you're going to have to figure out and sort through as you get ready for camp. What are you seeing from that group though so far? Even though they haven't been in pads, what do you like? What are you doing?
They've gotten better. They really have. They've gotten better, and they're battling. You know, and Joe's the leader of that group, and he's done a great job. And I told him in front of him, we're going to get on his back, and we're going to ride it. You know, we're going to ride that group to wherever we're going to go. You know, they're kind of the backbone of how we do things. Quarterback drives the train, but the line is what makes us go. So I think the group is starting to take its shape and form. I think we have some young players that are very interesting to me. I know Spencer Durango, he shows up every day, and very competitive, and I like him. And I think he's getting better. I think Cam's really improved. I think the rest of the veteran guys of that group, Greco, the Batonio, I think Batonio has the potential to be one of the better players in this league, bar none. And so I think it's a good group, and I think we still got to, you know, put ourselves in position to do the things that we want to do as an offensive football team. But I think there's some talent there, and so we just got to keep molding it and getting it the way we want it to be.
When you talk about RG3 getting better, I mean, is he getting a better feel? I know that was one of the things that was always talked about, feeling natural in the pocket. Do you see that?
He looks natural to me. I mean, he's checking the ball down and throwing the ball down the field and throwing the ball in tight spaces. And, I mean, he's improved. I think we've all seen that. I mean, let's be honest, he has. And so, I mean, there's another step. You know, again, he's just getting better every day, and so he's got to continue to chase that. You know, and if he does, we'll see where he can get to. But he's talented, but there's still work to be done.
Hugh, you've called Al Saunders the best receivers coach in football.
No question.
Obviously, his experience is vast. But what are the characteristics that you really pinpoint and make you think that of him?
Well, he's an unbelievable teacher, you know, and he's a great leader of men. And he knows how to get guys to play and play at a high level real fast. I mean, it is probably one of the most improved units on our football team. Is the receiver position, and that's a credit to him and Bob. You know, they've done a great job of molding those guys. They have great expectations. And again, I knew what I was getting when I asked him to come here. And I was getting one of the best coaches that's ever coached in this league, and that's what he's doing. That's what he's exhibiting every day.
Where does that energy come from?
I just think that's what he is. That's what he's always been. You know, it's really funny. I laugh sometimes because when I was a little younger, that's who I was. You know, it is. But he's tremendous, and he's competitive, and he wants those guys to be good, and he cares about them. He truly cares about those players, and so they play for him. They really do. So thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Might you bring Ernest Biner back to help out?
Yeah, we'll see how that unfolds. Yeah, Ernest has been great.
Thank you.
Yeah, get that last question in there before it's done.
PJB said last one like five questions ago.
Hey, it's your last chance to see Hugh. I understand. But first and foremost, we talked about it with Gribbs yesterday. Look, there's no quarterback decision to be made this week. There will be no decision made over the next 6 to 7 weeks. So we will not be having any Browns breaking news from that respect. It will be decided, we think, at some point, maybe second preseason game, third preseason game. But whenever Hugh it feels like he's ready to make the decision, he'll make it.
Correct. And I guess if we are starting with a clean slate.
Which I would say we are.
Correct. And changing the mentality with which we build and operate as a football team. Joe Thomas at left tackle, Joe Hayden when he returns. Mm-hmm. Might be the only two guys that have a for sure job on this football team. Where in the past it's been Dansby's going to start at our inside guy. This is going to be, Danny's going to be our nose tackle. And it was kind of like guys were like, you know, penciled in or if not penned in, not markered in at many spots. And I don't have a problem that if we are going back to the drawing board and starting anew, that if Hugh Jackson forces everyone to fight and earn a job.
He was asked second question, I think, and that was, have you thought about a depth chart?
No.
No, there's no depth chart.
And to be honest with you, and I know it's been stated this morning listening to Riz, you know, driving around, you know, and when Grossi called in for his, daily, 10 a.m. call, and Grossi's article, guys are taking – whoever's on the field first in practice at this point right now, if you really wanted to say that, would probably be the first guys to trot it out there on a Sunday to go play for your football team. So in some cases, with no depth chart and without naming a starter, those would be your starters. So who's been running out there at quarterback first? RG3.
Right.
Write your articles. Get your sense of satisfaction. Write your negative quarterback Cleveland, you know, article if you so want. And this is well beyond. This is everybody. Yep. You know what I mean? It's you could do that about every position. You know, if what kicker goes out and kicks the ball off the tee to start the first game of the season? If it's Travis Coons, he's your starting kicker.
Right.
It's there. It is. Right. It's so if you're watching practice, you know who the starters are as of right now, why who trots out there, because these coaches would be actually hurting themselves and making their job harder that if every day they were rotating a different guy, it's the twos are going to run out there first, the ones are going to go next, I want to see this guy with this guy. And even furthermore, I know we'll hear from Al Saunders later in the show, but speaking to Al Saunders, you know, off the air, talking to him, he's like, when we determine who our top three or four wide receivers are, every time the starting quarterback or whoever the first quarterback is to go out on the practice field is out there with the five guys that would probably start if today were opening day, the three or four wide receivers that are going to be that earn that opportunity will be the only ones taking the reps with the ones.
Yep.
And the reason why I state that is because last year with first year offensive coordinator John DeFilippo, it was you saw Hawk with Pryor, with Hartline, with Taylor. It was everybody's getting a little piece of the pie.
It was a mishmash.
It was a mishmash when it was McCown. Was it Manziel?
Right.
It was a revolving door, and you never got really good playing with the guys that you would play with on Sunday. That's all going to change.
Yep.
The starters are going to be the starters. They're going to get starters work in practice, the preseason, and then be ready to be primed for the start of this. And they're going to start until they get hurt or their chance or opportunity to continue to stay as a starter and their performance has changed and you interject that next guy.
216-578-0850 is the number. We'll open up the Twitter inbox here at Browns_daily. You can use the hashtag AskCBD. We'll bring in Eric Williams next to look at the Twitter mailbag as we continue. It's Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Always nice to get a visit from Tony Rizzo.
Yes.
While we're in studio here today here at the Galleria.
He walks in. We're off air.
Yes.
So we knew you could do or say whatever we wanted,
exactly.
Essentially, right?
Yes.
And he gives me the shh, and I'm like, what's up, Riz?
Hi, Riz. What's going on?
Got to get a laugh at him. Hope he has a good weekend.
Absolutely. Cleveland Browns Daily continues here on ESPN 850 WKNR. To the Twitter mailbag at Browns_daily with the hashtag AskCBD. Eric Williams, our producer today. What do you have for us, Easy?
All right, so SC kicks things off today at BigC1736. He tweets at Browns Daily. How does the defense look from practice, and does Xavier Cooper look like a long-term starter?
Xavier Cooper up to this point, I'll go second half first. Xavier Cooper at this point right now, to me, will probably be a sub- defensive lineman stalwart, where he's not a center. And the only reason at this point right now is Dez Bryant was such a producing end in the 3-4 scheme last year, and he doesn't show any signs of dropping off since he's played for Hugh in Oakland and he's played in the system with Ray Horton.
He considers himself now the leader of the defense, or one of the leaders of the defense.
Absolutely. Danny Shelton has locked down the middle in that 3-4 base scheme, and then I believe John Hughes will probably be the three technique, able to take a double team, but yet an active body. Xavier Cooper's probably going to be backing up John Hughes and or Dez Bryant at those two end positions. But Xavier Cooper, we knew when we traded back into the third round to draft him in 2015, it was the first step and how athletic he was for a big guy. And I think where that comes into play and what I love about this Ray Horton scheme is the diversity that he creates in the 3-4 scheme and then will carry over into the sub packages. So expect a lot of stunts. But he's the guy that, you know, we can't pay premium dollar for Dez Bryant and get the same production forever. But he's a guy that Xavier Cooper can grow into that role.
So maybe because we talked about yesterday, one of the things that really is kind of nice about the Browns defensive line is that there is some depth now. You've got, as you mentioned, if you're saying, okay, your starter, there's no depth chart, but let's just say your starters are going to be right now Shelton, Bryant, and
John Hughes.
Then you're looking at Cooper, Nassib, Meter as part of that rotation.
Correct.
Amongst others.
Yes.
That'll be
and Meter as a small school guy who, you know, played a lot of football as a rookie last year is gonna get pushed.
Yeah.
You know, by some of the undrafted free agents that we have in that room, the Jeffcoat kid, Lawrence Staples, mm-hmm. the kid out of Florida State who played at, you know, at extremely high level. But collectively, to go back to his question, the defense has been looking good. It's and you'll hear this from, you know, many different writers or analysts when you watch a practice. We're getting to the quarterback, but can we seal the deal, or was it really a sack? And that's very hard to tell.
Right.
The one
you're
thing
in short. I mean, you're getting to the quarterback in shorts.
Yes. So I would say that they're executing, they're communicating, which as I stand out of practice, something that I'm very attentive to, because when it's quiet out there, that means there's a little bit of uncertainty, and that the rookies have started to communicate more. The starters are communicative, pointing, you know, changing around, because Hugh Jackson's throwing a lot of formations, and we had the opportunity to spend that time with Ray Horton and talk about what it's like to practice against the guy with the unbalances and the overloads and the linemen lined up on the numbers and then shifting back in and the empty sets. So there's a lot of different looks that they're prepared for, but I would expect this defense, if they were ranked 30th or 31st, whatever they were, to be 15 ranks better, 10 to 15 spots better than they were in the past. We're not going to go from worst to first.
No.
And we're not going to be a top 10 defense yet.
But that's the thing. If you're in the teens, that's a tangible big improvement in year one.
And I would imagine, I would say we're probably in the 20s in offense,
yeah.
you know, mid 20s,
yeah.
that if we get into the teens on offense as well, that's 3 to 4 football games
yes.
in wins.
Yes.
You know, so if we if you take the three, you add the you know, the 3 to 4 simply by being better on both sides of the football, you know, that's 6 and 10, 7 and 9.
What else you got, Easy?
All right, so Brian Vaughn tweets at Browns Daily at the real underscore BV.
BV is the man. He is a sincere friend of the show with
yes.
the gifts of plenty. So thank you, Brian.
All right, there's a little fun fact about Brian, but he tweets about besides Coach Hugh, which other coach do you feel will have the biggest impact, and what position group will be most improved?
I would say, wow. I think a lot of the position groups are going to be better mm-hmm. because they're going to be better coached. But I would have to say the coach that we're going to hear from later in the show, Al Saunders,
wide receivers.
And the reason why is if we had a veteran laden group, say Hartline was still here yeah. and, you know, Hawk was, you know, there wasn't a lot of threats yeah. with youth like there is in those four draft picks. I might even still say the wide receiver group because he's that good of a coach. But I think as you look at how empty the cupboards felt last year at playmaking positions in the
totally.
Wide receiver room. And then he's going to initially make those guys better. That's Hawk, that's Gabriel, that's Pryor, and so on. And then you add those four guys that have to produce. That's why we drafted them. That's, as you heard from Hugh Jackson, that's why we took Corey Coleman 15th overall in the first round. That the impact that he will make at playmaking positions, because this is a passing league. So you need a passer. We believe we have that in RG3. Who's on the other end of those receptions? It's a very young group, and I think Al Saunders is going to be the catalyst to make them play head and shoulders above where a lot of people think they can.
All right, we'll hear from Al Saunders coming up at the bottom of the hour. We've reached the 2 o'clock hour, halfway through here at Cleveland Browns Daily. We will break, come back, and Eric Williams will have the Friday forecast for us. Keep those questions coming on Twitter. We'll get to more of those again. Use the hashtag AskCBD. Tweet us at Browns_daily. You can also call 216-578-0850 on this Friday. It's a Cavs Friday as they get set to take on the Warriors tonight, game 4 of the NBA Finals. We will not ignore that fact, certainly coming up as well. It is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.